time to wake up. It's Saturday morning. Find some milk and cereal. Grab a bowl and spoon. No, a bigger spoon. Head to the living room and take a seat on the floor while Joseph and Chris present to you
Saturday Morning Cartoon!
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Saturday Morning Cartoon Boom! This is a show where we wake up by the Saturday morning sun, plop down the living room floor with a big bowl of sugar, cereal, and watch our favorite cartoons, both old and new. I'm Joseph.
And I'm Chris.
And this... I bit my tongue.
Please leave that in the edit.
It's going to be like...
Please.
This morning, we watched Rurouni Kenshin.
So, anime intros and outros are like the most pensive emo things ever created because it's just like... Like, every shot is, like, the character is staring up in the sky in wonder, or they're drooping their head, looking all sad while, like, flower petals sweep past them in the wind and stuff like that, and it plays love songs.
Anime intros are all basically glamour shots in video form.
And it has nothing to do with the actual show at all. It's just showing characters looking all sad or looking all, like, amazed at something. That's one of the anime tropes that drives me insane.
This one was full of it.
Yes. They nailed it, man. And this was suggested by my buddy Kiri via Facebook Messenger. So thank you, Kiri.
Yeah. Kiri's somebody who you met at a convention that we both attended, correct?
Yes. We were at a convention in Texas. We actually got invited to speak at a panel about making podcasts. And like, so we got to speak in front of maybe 11 people, which was real cool.
All those people interested in podcasting.
And then I ended up meeting Kiri afterwards. And and she's really awesome. And she makes really cool music. She's in a band.
Emphasis on you met this person at the convention because they rudely did not introduce themselves to me.
Well, I met her like afterwards because like I didn't meet her in person. It was like we ended up chatting on an app after the convention because we were both said that we were at the convention.
Oh, all right. Fair enough. Yes. You passed this time, Kiri. This time.
But she lives in Texas. So, I mean, you can meet her one day if you want. You can go to her band's shows.
Nah, I feel like that's too far away for me. So, thank you anyway, Kiri, for suggesting the show. And the show that we watched, Rurouni Kenshin, aired from 96 to 98, created by Nobuhiro Watsuki originally as a manga, and then developed into an anime by Kazuhiro Furuhashi. Watsuki, the original manga creator, didn't have a lot to do with the anime itself, so it was kind of a hands-off approach because he was still working on creating the manga as the anime was going on and had to give the anime creators some free rein because... You know, he didn't really have the full story developed yet, so was behind sort of their schedule because they obviously have to keep pushing them out. And I'll talk about this a little bit more in a second, but a lot of it towards the last season doesn't really tie in with what the manga actually has in it.
That's really weird. You know, the manga still going and then the thing that is based off the manga is still going and kind of diverges from it.
It diverged, but the creator, Watsuki, he said he was pleasantly surprised and it was better than he had expected it to be.
You know what would suck if the anime was like better than the manga? He would probably be like, dang it, I'm a failure.
No, then he would just rewrite the manga to tie in with it, right? He's like, oh, wait, this idea is much better.
Or they'll make another Rurouni Kenshin later that follows the manga to a T like they did with Full Metal Alchemist.
Oh, yeah, true. See, I wonder, like, because they have so many OVAs and movies. There's even a live action movie that came out in 2011 or 12 or something. And there's two more slated for release, at least in Japan. I don't know. I don't think it was ever released in the US or anything, obviously, like not dubbed. Yeah. So, but you would have to, I'm sure you could find it, but there's two more slated to be created. I don't know where those are in production yet, but yeah. So there will at least be three live action Rurouni Kenshin movies.
Awesome. And like you said, lots of OVAs, because I definitely saw that.
Yeah. Like I got a little lost on trying to figure out which one I was supposed to watch because there were so many listings of this.
I know, like, if you just look up Rurouni Kenshin, like, all you find is the manga, so you had to search Rurouni Kenshin, Wandering Samurai, and that is the anime.
Yeah, I guess that's the official full title.
Yeah, that's like the way to distinguish it from all the other stuff.
Yeah, and this show was produced by Studio Gallop for episodes 1 through 66 and Studio Dean for episodes 67 through 95. Ran for 3 seasons, 95 episodes on the Fuji Television Network in Japan, Sci-Fi Channel in Australia, AXN and Animax Asia in Southeast Asia, and Channel S in the UK, and Cartoon Network Toonami in the US, of course.
Yeah, that makes sense. I never saw it on Toonami, though, and I used to watch it, so it's kind of weird. But I stopped at some point, so who knows?
I don't know when exactly it came to Toonami. I think the only thing I remember really watching on Toonami was Dragon Ball Z. I mean, that was my mainstay.
For me, it was DBZ, Tenchi Muyo, Cowboy Bebop. Oh, no, that Cowboy Bebop was Adult Swim. So, yeah okay. Oh, Toonami, yeah, it was like DBZ, Tenchi Muyo, and I think Gundam Wing, but then Gundam Wing also aired at night, like more uncensored, because then they could show blood.
Something that I had told you before, but I did not watch Tenchi Muyo just purely out of principle, because my friends used to say in high school that I looked like Tenchi, and I don't know, in high school I was offended by this, so I just refused to watch that show. But I would love to now at some point.
You kind of do look like Tenchi.
I'm okay with it now.
It's pretty funny.
He had a lot of beautiful ladies around him, so I assume he was a ladies man of some sort.
Oh my god, he had so many ladies. I was so jealous. It's ridiculous. Even ladies from space were into him.
See, that's what I want. That's the life I want. Space ladies.
Yeah, I didn't get any space ladies.
For a short synopsis of this show, the adventures of a young wandering swordsman who stumbles upon a struggling martial arts school in Meiji era Japan.
Yeah. That just happened.
That's a good description of at least sure. episode one. Yeah. So, Chris, who are some of the actors who played in the show?
All right, so the voice of Kenshin in Japan was Mayo Suzukaze, who hasn't really done a whole lot except for playing this character in the show and the multiple OVAs. In English, he was voiced by Richard Cansino, who's done lots of anime, including Naruto and Lupin the Third. The voice of Keoru was Miki Fujitani, who was the voice of Chun-Li in the Street Fighter 2 animated movie, which I have to see because I'm obsessed with Street Fighter and didn't realize this was a thing. In English, she was voiced by Dorothy Ilias Fun, who we have already heard as the voice of Meryl from Trigun. And she is also in lots of other anime like Naruto, Ghost in the Shell, Digimon, and several Gundam series since there's a billion of those. The voice of Sanosuke was Yuji Ueda. And then in English, Lex Lang, who is the current voice of Goku in Dragon Ball Super. And finally, the voice of Yaiko was Mina Tominaga in Japan. And then in English, Brienne Brosy, who voiced a lot of the kaiju from Power Rangers, including Sacadillo, who is like the best like kaiju from Power Rangers ever, because he's just a big old armadillo who's all angry and like slashes people. And it's just hilarious. And then she was also the voice of the little robot owl Circuit from Power Rangers Time Force. And been in lots of anime like Digimon, Dot Hack Slash, like lots of those. I say slash because there's like multiple with something after the slash. And then Bleach. So she's done a lot of stuff. This whole cast has done a lot of anime. Like this seems to be their specialty.
Nice.
You, real quick, you watched the sub and I watched the dub.
Correct.
So I'm guessing we're going to see some differences. We don't know how much, but we've done this before. We did it for Detective Conan. Uh-huh. So it'll be interesting to see like what differences we find.
Yeah, true. In a second, I'll mention something that may have been different, but we'll see. So for a few tasty marshmallows that have a big bowl of a Rurouni Kenshin cereal, the first two seasons followed the manga it's based on fairly closely until the third season, at which point it goes in a completely different direction. Like I said before, the writer of the manga wasn't able to keep up with the, you know, the strict schedule of the anime, at least not to put out good quality manga. So he gave them kind of free rein towards maybe the end of the second season and throughout the third season. So at that point, it kind of veers off a bit. But I can't say in what way because I'm not familiar with the original writings. Rurouni, translated as Wanderer, is in fact not a real Japanese word. It is a neologism by the original creator of the comic this series was derived from.
I was kind of wondering that because just like right off the bat, for whatever reason, I felt like Rurouni was not an actual word. And so I assumed maybe it was a name or something because I'm like, that's not the word for Wanderer.
See, I had no idea what the word for Wanderer was. So I just assumed it was right. And I would have ran with it had I not read this.
Nope, you were wrong, sir.
I was. 1999, Sony tried and failed to market the series in the United States as Samurai X because... This is my assumption, but I think it's a strong assumption that it's because he had the X scar on his cheek, so he's Samurai X.
My assumption is that they wanted to be real edgy, so they're like, oh, dude, let's just call it Samurai X for extreme.
Yeah, Samurai X extreme.
Like, you gotta eat extreme flavored Doritos and Monster energy drink while you watch it, because it's extreme. I don't know, man.
No.
Do they still have extreme flavored Doritos? Is that still a thing?
I haven't had Doritos in years. I have no idea. Probably.
Oh, my God.
Some of the show's depictions of obscene language, intense violence, and tobacco, and some drug usage were subject to heavy editing on Toonami. Episodes 63 through 95 did not air, but they were included in the DVD release. So I'm wondering if the versions that you watched were the heavily edited ones.
It had to be, because there were no drugs, there is no swearing or anything that I saw. And, like, I'm trying to picture, like, what characters were doing drugs in this this anime, because I can't picture any of them doing. Well, maybe Sanosuke? I don't know.
Well, see, I feel like, I think one of the main characters, because first and foremost, this is sort of a story of redemption. And I had read that one of the main characters, I can't remember who it was. I don't think it's one of the ones that we had immediately seen. It might have been one of the side characters in the later episodes, but I think they were sort of drug dealers or something before they came over to Kenshin's side. So,
oh, okay.
I'm sure it was more on the villain side that the drugs were being done, but I didn't see any in the episodes I watched.
Yeah, who knows, man?
Who knows?
Somebody knows, just not us.
No. I'm pretty sure a lot of people know, just not us.
Yeah.
But so, Chris, do you have any memories of this show?
No, the only thing I knew was I recognized the design for the character of Kenshin, just with the hair and the scar on his cheek. But that's it. That's all I knew.
I had heard about this some from friends in high school who were way bigger anime fans than I was. And it's not that I didn't like anime. It's just that, you know, I was balancing that, cartoons, comics, all of this stuff. So I wasn't completely like an anime, like a huge fan like these guys were. Like, some of these people, they could tell you anything and everything about it. But they were introducing me to so much that Rurouni Kenshin kind of took a back seat to the other shows that they had me watch, like Trigun. Even Dragon Ball Z, I was introduced to. Like, I had not really watched it before high school, and just various other shows. Like, anime was something that I really didn't discover until high school because of these people. So there were so many that I couldn't really fit it in, but I knew about it, and, you know, it got rave reviews by the people who had watched it. So I was curious.
On the surface, just like looking at the plot for this anime and stuff, it just, to me, it doesn't stand out as much as other ones like, I don't know, like Trigun, Cowboy Bebop, some of the Gundam series and stuff like that. Just, I feel like those ideas just kind of outshine this one a little bit, because this one just seems pretty simple. But I don't know, man. Like, yeah, it was one that I just never heard of it enough or took the time to look into it. But
yeah, it's kind of the same with me, because it's like, looking at it from the surface, the colors are kind of bland. There's not a lot of brightness or like, high-tech suits or anything like that. So it's like,
yeah,
compared to the other ones you have at your disposal, it fell by the wayside. But I don't know if it was deserved or not, because I ended up really liking it after a while. It took me a second, though. I kind of had to sleep on it, but I feel like I got it now. Like, I get where it's going.
I'm kind of in between. I'm not sure where I stand, honestly. So as we talk about this episode, I'll see if my opinion changes a little bit. But after having watched them, I'm really on the fence about whether I like this or not.
Yeah, no, that's fair. It's fair.
So it'll be a process as we go through our talk here.
Might as well just jump into them then. The three episodes we watched for today's show. Their first episode, highest rated episode, and finally random listener chosen episode. The order may vary depending on how these episodes fall chronologically, but of course we have to start with the very first episode, being the handsome swordsman of legend, a man who fights for love.
Love.
Season 1, episode 1. So just as a precursor to this, all these titles are going to be really long.
Yeah.
Because it's like the title, and then it's like, okay, that's fine. But then it's like, no, it's not, because colon, another title right after it.
Yeah, they don't actually say colon. That's
no.
The, You know, it's the punctuation. It'd be the weird if it was just like colon.
Yeah. The Handsome Swordsman of Legends colon.
You made me choke on my water when I was taking a drink.
So in this first episode, it was kind of like we described in the, well, not kind of, it was exactly like we described in the description of the show, which was Wandering Swordsman comes by a failing dojo, antics ensue.
So in this little village, we have Kaoru, who is the head of this dojo, even though she's like, it seems like she's maybe a teenager. I'm not quite sure on the age, but I'm thinking late teens maybe. And because in every anime, the very first villain you see is a giant, like bulky dude that's literally two or three times the size of normal characters. We see a guy like that and he's like picking on somebody, and apparently he is Batosai, at least that's who he says he is and stuff. And Batosai is supposed to be this legendary warrior who is called the Manslayer, which means something totally different now than I think it does in that show. I guess in the context that works. But when I think of a Manslayer, I'm just like, yeah, she's a Manslayer. Stay away from her. But anyway, so this guy's been killing people in the village and nobody's stopped him because he's, you know, huge. Kaoru tries to fight him with a wooden sword, which is probably a horrible idea, and it turns out to be a horrible idea because he just breaks it super easy. Yeah. Right before she had the run-in with him, she had run into Kenshin, who she didn't know who he was yet. And Kenshin is very much... So there's going to be a lot of parallels between this and Trigun because the plot's similar and the characters are similar. And Kenshin is that... has an air of seriousness about him, but ends up being really clumsy and does goofy things and has the goofy looks on his face.
Yeah.
And she originally, I think, accused him of being Batosai, and then he was super clumsy and she's like, you can't be. And then she sees the giant dude and she's like, that's him. And he says, yeah, it's me. I'm giant guy. I'm Batosai.
Yeah. Some of the parallels just off the top here between Trigun and Kenshin. Yes, they're both, you know, legendary, you know, slayers, or in Vash Stampede's case, the humanoid typhoon. So there's Batosai, the legendary warrior. Then there's a humanoid typhoon who no one thinks Vash is that person. And right. I think even in the first episode of Trigun, they think that it is one of these larger dudes who's in there.
That is exactly, it's the same plot, I swear to God.
Yeah, and it's the same.
I gotta say, like, I love Trigun. It's one of my favorite animes, but this came out first, so Trigun totally ripped off of this thing. Like, unashamedly. It's so similar that there's no way they didn't.
It's crazy how much I was thinking Trigun when I was watching this show.
Yeah, I know, me too. That's all I could think about was Trigun. I was like, this is Trigun, except with samurai swords.
Yeah, especially how, like, goofy and clumsy he was. I was like, this is Vash the Stampede. Come on.
Mm-hmm.
I can't shame Kenshin because it came first, so I'm going to have to go rewatch Trigun and shame it as it goes on.
Yeah, but we won't because we love Trigun.
No, absolutely not.
Even though he's really clumsy and stuff like that, and Kaoru doesn't think Kenshin really is any kind of threat, when Batosai looks like he's about to kill Kaoru, Kenshin, like, quickly knocks her out of the way, like, I mean, at lightning speed, saves her and gets the guy to, like, back down and leave.
Yeah, and then we find out that this guy is the guy who's calling himself Batosai is a former student at this dojo. And this dojo, just to lay it out there, is one that it practices almost like peaceful sword fighting where...
Yes.
They are pretty much all using wooden swords, or at least swords that are sheathed in the wood, you know, wooden sheath. And they don't fight to hurt or to kill. They just fight to defend. And so it's something that keeps coming up throughout the episodes. That's why I mention it now, because it's going to keep coming up. And that is also something that, much like Vash Stampede, Kenshin practices, because his sword, we find, is a reverse blade where the blade usually is on this katana is dull. Like, it's the dull side of it on the bladed side. So he can't really cut people with this side of it. It's just kind of a blunt object he's using.
Yeah, it's really weird. So the sharp end faces him instead of away from him, mm-hmm. which is, it's so weird. But I mean, he could still use it. He just, it's a weird way, like, he would have to fight to actually use it. So the point is he doesn't want to use it that way. He doesn't want to hurt or kill anybody.
Right.
And as this happens, well, Kaoru does not trust him, and she tries to kind of lock him away in this little, not really a dungeon, but like a little laundry room or something for the night. Even though he saved her life, she's like, I don't trust you. You got to stay in here. And he's like, yeah, sure, that's fine. Yeah. But then he's kind of asking these questions, like, because Kaoru doesn't recognize this big dude yet. And he's just like, he's been asking her questions about the dojo. And he's like, can you think of anyone that may have been a problem that was a student here in the past, you know, from your father and stuff? And she's like, no, absolutely not. You know, no one that learned our style would ever do that. And then as she like goes to sleep, she starts having like these dreams, like these flashbacks, and she does remember a person. And this guy in particular, it's like he tried to kill one of the other students in the dojo. Like he started cutting him with a sword, and her dad stepped in to stop him and swung his sword. Like, I guess the guy never uses a sword, but he did this time. But what I thought was weird is he hit the guy's thumb in his sword wielding hand, which was his right hand, and his thumb, like, I don't know, it bled a little bit, but it just looks like it broke. And the guy was like, you'll never be able to hold a sword again. And I'm like, why? What, can't he just splint it and then it'll heal like a normal broken bone and then he'll just use the sword again?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, but the way he did it, I guess he hit it in such a way that it was broken beyond repair, I guess, is what you're supposed to think about this. Because he was still, I don't even think he was using the full blade either. I think he was still using the wooden blade and just use it to debilitate him, not to kill him or hurt him, really.
Oh, okay. So the big guy that's saying he's Batosai is using his left hand, which I guess, like, they all find strange. That's one of the first things that Kenshin noticed was, you know, he's using his left hand. So then she has that dream and she realizes, oh, that guy's right thumb was busted. He can't hold his sword in his right hand. Maybe this is the guy. Kind of figures out that that's who this person is. This guy is, I guess her father's dead, I assume. And maybe she says that, I just don't remember. So the guy is coming after her instead as a form of revenge for humiliating him and for wrecking his thumb. You know, because who wouldn't avenge a thumb?
Yeah, so he's trained for years with his left hand to make himself as adept with his left hand as he was with his right hand when he could use it. And he's finally come to he's reached the point where he could, but he's still using the Kiyomi style, which is what this dojo is. So what he's trying to do is, as Batosai, using the Kiyomi style of fighting, he's trying to shame this dojo into basically shutting down. And
it's working.
Right, because the remaining students who were there, which were like three,
yeah,
they had to leave because either they didn't feel comfortable working for a dojo that was associated with these murders, or their mothers wouldn't let them continue going to the dojo for that same reason.
Yeah, exactly. Eventually, like, things come to a head. Batosai and a group of guys, like followers of his, like these little lackeys or cohorts, get into the dojo. They grab Kaoru and are maybe gonna kill her, maybe do other sinister things first. Like, I don't know, they kind of hint like some nasty things are about to take place. When Kenshin shows up and they're just kind of playing him off and stuff, like, they're like, what's this guy gonna do? And then Kenshin, with like no effort at all, takes everybody out except for Batosai. I mean, all the guys are gone, like, down within a second. And one of the guys, he remarks like, oh my god, he took everyone out at the same time because he moved that fast. He has godlike speed, which will come up a lot in the next episode.
The guy was saying like he took out like five, maybe six people at the same time. And then he was using the ultrasonic killer style, which I can't really pronounce it. It's like the Heiten Mitsurugi style, which is what he was taught, and essentially translating to the ultrasonic killer style. So, which means it's just very fast, almost faster than they can even register what's happening. Think like the Flash, where he can kind of take everybody out before they even realize what's going on.
Right. So then Batosai is just like, oh, I'm the legendary Batosai, I'm going to take you out. And like, was it like one hit? Kenshin takes him down, like, well, knocks him through the floor.
Well, yeah, but then he breaks his other thumb.
Oh, that's right.
Not even his thumb. He breaks all of his other fingers so that he can't use that anymore either. Yeah. I wonder if he's going to come back with like training using his feet or something.
Maybe he'll have swords like taped to his arms or inserted like the really crappy Deadpool from Wolverine Origins.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
The katanas on both arms. Oh, that was awful.
That was something to add to that, though. Before that battle happens when Kenshin comes in to the dojo to save Kaoru. Because she's talking about how, you know, telling the bigger guy, like, you know, we practice peace here, but we don't aim to hurt anyone or anything like that. Or sword fighting is for defending yourselves, not for violence. And then Kenshin comes in and he's like, you know, I don't believe any of that stuff. Like, that's play talk. And like, that's not, sword fighting is made for killing and made for hurting. And but then he's like, but I want to believe more in the play talk. So I'd like it to be, you know, for peace and all that.
Right.
But then he proceeds to take everyone out, like you said, with his sword fighting.
So like, Kenshin's more of a realist in that he's like, yeah, the swords are pretty much 99% of the time used for killing. I wish it weren't that way, but it is. But I'm going to try to be that 1% and not use it that way because I don't want to. I want it to be used for good. Whereas Kaoru is very much an idealist in that she believes that this peace is attainable and that everybody could abide by it, or at least has the capacity to abide by it. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, so that's a really interesting dynamic between those two, like as far as their philosophies and everything go. And then this guy that calls himself Batosai is definitely in like Kenshin's camp, where he's like, because there's even in the flashback when Kaoru's dad like first confronts him, he goes, a sword is to chop people up. That was the best like explanation I've ever heard. Kenshin then reveals to Kaoru that he is the real Batosai, and then
that's right,
and tells her what his like what his name is, because so Batosai isn't his actual name. It was like Batosai is the name of the legend, you know, it's the manslayer, it's like the nickname that he earned during the war. And he does not
humanoid
want
typhoon.
To be associated with that name anymore. He even says as much, I don't want to be called by that name, but I can't let somebody else be called by it either, because he realizes the power that that name has. I mean, because obviously this big dude was using it, and it scared people, and it got people to follow him and think like him. So he's kind of that mindset. I don't want to be this, but I can't let anyone else be this either. Yeah, it's also, yeah, like I said, it's very Vash the Stampede from Trigun. I mean, it's so much like that. It's crazy. He's like, yes, I am this guy, but that's not who I want to be, and I don't want to be remembered for it.
Right, exactly. He doesn't want to be the humanoid typhoon. I mean, Batosai, the legendary swordsman.
Yes.
The manslayer.
Yeah. The legendary typhoon swordsman. And then he's going to leave, and then Kaoru's kind of like visibly upset, and then she's like, oh, yeah, fine. You know, I guess you could have stayed and helped me clean up and everything, but whatever. And then you hear the door shut and you think that he left, but then he says something. She turns around and he says basically that he'll stay and help her at the dojo and things like that. So, which that kind of surprised me, because I kind of thought this was going to be he goes off on adventure and she follows him because the dojo is pretty much defunct. But instead, he sticks around to help. So I thought that was cool.
Yeah. And this is kind of the blossoming of the romantic side of this anime. This anime is very multifaceted in the sense that it's got a lot of different things going on. The song at the end of the episode, at least at this episode, is like, give me your love, I need your love. At least that's the Japanese version of it.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same thing. The introduction of this episode, at least in the version I watched, was so, because it starts out like it's going to be like metal, like the first few seconds it's like rock and guitar, then all of a sudden it turns into this like bubblegum pop music, and I was like, what is this?
Yeah, in the version I watched, it was something about sugar cubes and tears streaming down his face.
Yeah, I was like, what is this? This is so weird. I felt like none of the music, I feel like, fits this show whatsoever. Like, not even close, man.
No, I don't think so either.
And every episode we watched had a new intro and outro, and it drove me nuts.
But to be fair, we did watch 3 episodes from 3 different seasons, yes. So it makes sense. But the second episode we watched for today's show was Between Life and Death, Master the Ultimate Technique, Amakakiri Ryu no Hikameki, !
Like, can I get you to say that as many times as you can really fast?
I can't say it even once really fast, so no. you did. Like, you got it. You got my best. This was season 2, episode 16, and this was the highest rated?
This was the highest rated episode. So originally when Kiri said that she wanted this show, she didn't pick an episode, but she said, just make sure you watch an episode from season 2, because she likes the fighting in season 2. She thinks that season 2 is like, I guess that maybe that's her favorite part of the show. So it just kind of lucked out that the highest rated episode was an episode from season two.
In this one, I guess I could see why it's the highest rated, because in this one, while training,
sort of,
Kenshin finally proves himself worthy of learning the final technique from his master, Seijuro Hikko.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
He learns the secret final technique from his master.
Yeah, he learns a couple of techniques from his master that he thinks is the final, but then he learns the final technique.
The final technique, yeah.
There's so many techniques. I think that's the one thing that bugs me about this show, is it's very predicated on just learning techniques and fighting styles and the importance of techniques. And I'm like, eh. Because I'm like the big problem that Kaoru had in the first episode was like, oh, this guy's using our fighting style. I can't have that, because then people are going to recognize it and be like, oh, no, like this murderer is using it and you're shameful. And I'm like, if I saw someone fighting with a sword, I'd be like, yeah, man, that's some sword fighting. That's a sword fighting technique. Okay. I mean, yeah. I'm not going to know anything but that. Yeah. Yeah. He definitely has a sword in his hand. He swung it.
Yeah. In the opening of this one is talking about two hearts being fused together. So again, sticking with kind of the romance theme for the songs.
Yes. The, God, this music, man.
So I don't get it. This one kind of opens with, Kenshin fighting a man at the waterfall who ends up being Seijuro Hikko the 13th, which is his former master or current master, former master, I guess, former master.
A little bit of both, I guess.
Yeah.
I can't tell. That's hard.
What he's learning. And so he's trying to learn a secret technique from his master, former master, current master. I don't know. We watched some flashbacks of where he's young or he's a child and watching all these villagers around him being killed. We see that this master, or we see that Seijuro, he basically rescued him just by killing all the bandits around him.
Right.
So, but then he just kind of left him on his own. He's like, all right, well, you know, you're safe now, so go do your own thing.
Yeah, it was a situation where like, so Kenshin, who was not actually Kenshin at that time, he was Shinta. That was his name.
Right, right.
His little boy, Shinta. He's with this village. He has no parents. They're already dead. And I guess he's been taken in by some villagers or something. These bandits are attacking and killing them. And this one woman is trying to keep him safe and, you know, saying, spare the child, blah, blah, blah. Apparently, what had happened was Kenshin tried, or not Kenshin, at the time it was Shinta, tried to stick up to the bandits, and so they basically saved him for last and killed everybody else. And before they could kill him, that's when this random guy shows up and kills all of them, but then just leaves Shinta to fend for himself, just leaves him with this pile of just dead people all over the place.
You know, went to that flashback, then came back to the present where he's still trying to learn a technique. What he has to do is he gives him an ultimatum that you either hit me right now or I'm just going to walk away and it's over. Like, we're done with the training. And so what he had to do, of course, is put all of his heart and soul into it. And they both jumped really high, but Kenshin falls so hard that he gives himself a concussion and knocks himself out for a second.
So then he goes to sleep again and we get another flashback. What's funny though is every time, like, so the first time he has a flashback, he's dreaming and we're woken up to his master like yelling like, hey, are you gonna sleep all day, wake up? And then when he knocks himself out, the master wakes him up saying the exact same thing, like, hey, how long do you plan on sleeping, wake up? So the second flashback we get is, I think it's basically Shinta, who is Kenshin, we've said this, Shinta is burying these villagers and stuff himself, and his, who will become his master, was talking with some people like elsewhere, either in an adjacent village or somewhere else in that village, and asked about the boy that survived and stuff like that, because I guess he's kind of like, you know, maybe I shouldn't have just left the kid. So he asked about him. They're like, no, we haven't really seen him, but he's been like up, you know, that way. So he comes back, sees the boy burying these people, and he's kind of asking about it, and then decides that he's going to take this kid under his wing because he saw him stand up to the bandits, even though it didn't work out in his favor very well, saying, you know, you want revenge, you have hate, I'm going to teach you how to use that, basically. And then renames him, like, Shinta is a name of a warrior. Your name's going to be Kenshin. So he basically named the kid, took him in, was his master, kind of a surrogate father for him for a while. But we do find out that I don't know how old Kenshin is supposed to be in the series. My guess is that he's somewhere in his 20s, maybe mid-20s. But apparently, in the present day, Kenshin had abandoned his master 15 years ago. So I guess he learned to a certain point. They seem like they're both kind of hotheads, so that Kenshin left at some point and didn't return. And I don't know what brought them back together now, but obviously they're together again, and he's trying to learn this final attacker technique to be able to defeat the ultimate bad of the series.
And the first final technique, it's funny to say
the
that.
The first final technique yes.
was Kuzu Ryusen, which was, he was teaching them, or he was showing him like these nine different, these sword techniques you can come at from. But the idea is for this attack, you use them all at the same time somehow, and it's unblockable and undodgeable.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Because you're hitting nine parts of the body or something.
Right. And so the only way to really counter it is to use the exact same move and kind of cancel out all nine of the strikes.
Right.
And so they come at each other again with one of those rushing, like, who's going to come out the victor things with the all nine attacks. And Kenshin ends up losing it, and he doesn't understand why. And it comes down to the arm strength. Like, his master is noticeably larger and stronger than Kenshin is.
Well, it's funny, is like, and I don't know what he says in the sub, but like in the dub, he's such a dick. Because he's like talking to Kenshin, and Kenshin's like, oh, I don't know what I did wrong. Like there must be some sort of flaw. And his master's like, no, it was perfect. But you severely lack the power compared to me, so you'll never beat me in a million years. And I'm like, what a jerk.
I mean, that's kind of what he says. I don't know about the million years part, but he said something similar to that.
Yeah, he's such a jerk. Now, there's this weird thing where when his master's like talking, there's one part, and I wonder if this was the dub only. His mouth is like not even moving, but you're hearing him talk a lot, and then his mouth starts moving a little bit, but really slowly. So I'm wondering if they added more language to the specific scene and paused the actual animation to try to, like, you know, extend that or something. I don't know.
They probably did, because I don't remember a part where his mouth wasn't moving to his speech.
Oh, really? Yeah.
After failing this final attack, he's then told, you know, there's only one way to beat the final attack, which is the actual final attack that I'm about to show you.
So there's a final attack, but then there's the real final attack.
Right. But this one, you have to, like, I'm going to give you a night, like, search your soul and you'll figure out a way to beat me. Like, basically, you'll figure out the final attack.
Well, yeah, because it's like he tells Kenshin, like, if you don't complete it, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah.
So then Kenshin's like, all right, I'm not afraid. I will do it. And then his master's just like, nah, you're not ready. You really are a stupid apprentice. And I was like, dang, what a jerk.
Yeah, he calls him foolish in this one, not a stupid apprentice. But
he's, man, too, English makes it so much like meaner.
So he's explaining to him, so Shishiro, at least at this point, is the main bad guy of the show.
Yeah.
And so he's saying, like, you know, an incomplete man can never win against Shishiro. So what he eventually had to do was, you know, he's like, you have to push past what you think. You have to essentially have no concern for your own life in order for this to work, because you have to make an attack before the nine attacks come through. Right. And so he's able to eventually do it. And in doing so, though, much like his master would have done to him, he ends up fatally wounding the master.
Yeah.
And so he's kind of laying there dying, and basically, like, it's okay, because this is exactly what I had to do to get to the point that I am.
It's a cycle, basically, is that the apprentice has to kill the master to master this. I said master twice. To master this technique. That's how it works. That's how it's always worked. So like he killed his master before him, Kenshin kills his master. If Kenshin ever teaches this to somebody else, that person will be the person to kill Kenshin.
It's probably, Kenshin's probably just going to be like, no, I don't know the move.
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't want to die.
There's only one final move, not two.
Right. And, you know, there was one quote that his master said earlier before they did the move. I think it was the night when he said, you know, you're not ready. You need to take the night, blah, blah, blah. And I like this quote, and I'm going to take this quote to heart, which is, no one should leave this world without knowing the taste of good sake.
Oh, yeah. That's when I think he pours it on the gravestones.
Yeah, he does. He did pour it on the gravestones. I was like, oh, I like it. He's pouring one out for his homies.
Right. So the master, and this is why I guess this was an effective episode and highest rated possibly, is because the master essentially sacrifices himself in order to continue Kenshin's learnings. And even though he was coming off very gruff and, you know, cold hearted, ultimately he sacrificed himself so that Kenshin could proceed.
Yeah, he's like preparing Kenshin for what's to come, basically, at the cost of his own life. Because Kenshin is succeeding and learning this technique is more important in the long run than his own life. Mm-hmm. So that's cool. Plus, in this episode, we get to see some of where Kenshin came from, that Kenshin's not even his name and all this crazy stuff. So yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff. So I watched this episode twice. The first time I watched it, I was super bored because it was a lot of talking about techniques and not a lot of stuff going on. And like, I kind of got sidetracked a little bit. And then the next day I was like, I'm going to watch this one over and I need to give it a better chance. And I watched it over and I took way more from it because there's a lot more than what seems like is on the surface. So I definitely appreciated it more the second time.
Yeah, something else that happens because of this, and I don't know if this is directly responsible for it, but what the master tells him before he dies is this also removes you from your vow never to kill again, because you've killed me, so now your vow is over and you can freely kill when it presents itself, when the opportunity presents itself.
Now that's interesting because the dub does something different.
Oh, what does it say?
So in the dub, he says, this is part of the technique, so this doesn't count towards your vow to never kill again.
Really?
Yeah. Weird, right?
So that was kind of the opposite way that it went with this one.
Yeah, it's really strange.
Because now it removes your vow to never kill again.
Yeah, so in the sub, it's like, yeah, go kill. And the dub is like, nah, you didn't kill me. That was just a thing. So you're good.
Interesting. I wonder if that's what it... Maybe that's loosely translated.
Yeah, it could be.
And that's what it meant in the Japanese version. I don't know.
Somewhere I think they probably goofed in one of them.
Yeah. So let's go on to the third episode we watched for today's show.
Whee!
Feng Shui Surprise Attack! Exclamation point. The Mystery of the Pentagram Spread. Season 3, episode 28.
Okay.
You chose this one, right?
I liked this one.
Yeah. This one was kind of silly, but that was predicated on the fact that Western feng shui is much different than Eastern feng shui.
Well, this is supposed to be not feng shui. They call it feng. Is it feng shui? Hang on a second.
But that's how it's spelled
somewhere. How to pronounce it? Because I realized it was weird. Feng shui. So this is feng shui, which is completely different than, you know.
No, but it's spelled the same way. So it's really? Like the same thing.
Okay, yeah. So in the dub, they were saying shui.
Oh, because I think it's kind of the same idea in that it's about balance or something. Oh, but,
okay, I get it.
But I'm pretty sure that it's the same thing. Maybe in the Western version, they just didn't want it to be associated with it.
I bet you're so right. Now that you say it, it makes sense because of what those guys are doing. But so I like this because the first part of this episode, well, for one, we got another new intro and this thing was 2 minutes long. I'm not even kidding. It was like a minute 58 by the time we actually got to the episode.
It was about hugging. It was about something about embracing you tightly.
Yes. And love was one of the... Of course. Love you, love you, love you was lyrics and God, man. But anyway, this is cool because we see it's several hundred years ago. We see these two warring clans fighting over the shrine and they have these mystical powers. So it's this wind clan fighting against the water clan at the center, at the shrine and the shrine is at the center of what looks like ley lines that are forming a pentagram. And then we go centuries later, and that's where Kenshin and Keoru, and now we also have these other characters, Sanosuke and Yahiko, who is Sanosuke is this kind of, I don't know, he's a little bigger than Kenshin is. He's definitely gruffer. He's got an attitude, definitely likes to start fights. And then Yahiko is like this little boy who sounds a lot like Ash Ketchum in the dub, and it sucks. And he's kind of obnoxious, but like you get the feeling that he can back it up, but he's kind of like an annoying little kid that's like with the group. But anyway, they are where this, I think where this shrine used to be.
And they are, at least this city, the surround, not a city, but this, the town surrounding where this altar used to be, at least in the dojo that they're at, it's the water, the well water is turning kind of a reddish brown color.
Yeah.
And like bad kind of, you know, quote unquote, cursed things are happening, like bad things are happening around the town. And we see, we see this in the original flashback, the 275 years ago thing, where there's this kind of giant compass map that I think I believe the Water Clan is handing to someone.
Yes.
And it points to where the way lines are to this pentagram. So that comes into play in a little bit. That's why I mention it. So we come back to the present, and then you've got the well water turning all reddish, you know, gross looking, and just bad things are happening all over, and no one knows why.
So we get this guy who's supposed to be like a feng shui or feng shui master, who's going around with this like compass kind of map looking thing, and it's pointing at different stuff. And basically it's pointing him to where he'll be like, oh, like the flow of chi is broken here. Like one example is there is a kind of like an apartment, not apartment, but like, I mean, they refer to it as being an apartment in the dub, but it's like a small house that's connected to other houses, you know, that tenants are living in. And he's like talking to the owner. He's like, this has to be torn down because it's blocking the flow of chi. I think he calls it the dragon's chi or something, and saying that this is why these bad things are happening, is because this stuff is in the way. This rich guy is coming along and paying people that are living in or have restaurants or things like that in the way, paying them to move. And then they're like tearing it down and putting these like stones in place, basically like these wards. Well, so he says they're wards, but don't think they really are.
To ward off evil spirits, yeah. And
supposedly, you
know, calamity, supposedly. Exactly. And so we're seeing this progress as this, you know, wealthy man in yellow, this businessman, keeps going around
with a smug look on his face. I just want to slap it off of him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he looks so untrustworthy.
Yes.
Yeah, so he bought the house, the apartments, and put the stones there, or the stone there. And then he goes, or he sends another one of his, scouts to the restaurant that you were saying, and trying to find where the chi is. It's being blocked by the heat from the oven.
Right.
And so the guy's like, I'm going to need you to remodel this kitchen so that that's not happening. And they're like, no, we're not going to do that.
Yes.
So what he does instead, he like uses some of his powers, I guess his feng shui power, and he makes the fire erupt from the stove and burn the entire restaurant down.
Yeah. And then so like Kenshin and Kaoru and crew were talking with the woman that, well, I don't know if she owned it or if she just works there. Her name's Tao. And they're kind of hanging out, and she's like, no, like, we're going to rebuild and stuff. We can't have this restaurant in another place. This is our place. This rich guy comes back a few times trying to get her to sell it, and she shoots him down. And this is where, like, we get to see where Sanosuke is kind of a hothead, because he immediately just starts ripping this guy a new one, telling him to get out, like, trying to start a fight with the guy, just insulting him left and right. And the guy just, you can tell this guy is trying really hard to keep his cool, because he is a rich man that is not used to hearing no, and definitely not used to being treated that way. But he comes back again, too. Like, it happens twice, and each time Sanosuke is, like, you know, telling him off.
We see someone, like, working on kind of an ink pentagram-looking thing, and we're not sure what it is at this point. It's kind of a little map.
Yeah. He ends up finding Kenshin and the others and talks to them and stuff, and they're asking if he's one of those feng shui guys, and he's like, no. He basically says he's a reporter. He's working on a story, and it's kind of disclosed that he's not actually a reporter, you know, but he doesn't mean him any harm. And he's just kind of asking questions because the dojo that they're at, the water in their well turns red also. And so he just kind of marks on this map that he's got. So as like the rest of this stuff is kind of unfolding, he's marking on this map where all these incidents are occurring and then drawing lines in between them. And that forms the pentagram. And he's like, oh, shit, basically.
Yeah, he finds this the pentagram made out of this ink. And then he's shocked. Like, we're not, because we knew it, but he's pretty shocked. And then I think the episode kind of cuts off there.
No, there's like some crazy stuff that happens before. It's like right around the time you see him complete that pentagram, like this group of creepy ninjas bust into where like the dojo where Kenshin and all of them are. And
immediately
knock Sunosuke and Yahiko out. Like, I mean, with no effort, those two were down for the count. And then they do something like they extend their hands and you see this like these like waves of energy or something. And then Kenshin can't move. I mean, if anyone's going to save him, it's Kenshin, but Kenshin can't move a muscle because these guys are controlling him. And it was super creepy. And then he's like struggling against it and stuff. And then some other dude suddenly shows up, takes them all out with like a wave of his hand. They all just crumple to the ground.
Yeah.
And Kenshin's like, who are you? And he's like, I'm the one. And then there's like 5 seconds of nothing. And then he's like, I'm the one that's going to save this town.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's how the dub goes. And then that's the end of the episode.
Yeah. He's the one who came to save them. And he came to save the city. And we don't know who he is at this point. We see the pentagram ink map thing and then the episode cuts off. So we did not watch the continuation of this. So I don't know how it ends, but I'm pretty sure Kenshin and the others survive and everything is fine.
Probably. But this made me want to watch more because I really enjoyed this episode. I thought it was really cool. I like that we got to see some mystical stuff. I like these, like the scary ninjas, this bad guy that's like rich and we don't know his motives or what he's going to use this shrine for at the middle of the pentagram.
Plus, we got to see all that feng shui action.
Yeah, there's just a lot of mystery to this episode. And to where, you know, the first episode I thought was okay. I'm like, but I like Trigun better. So if I want to see this episode, I'll just watch Trigun. The second episode, there was some cool deep stuff, but there wasn't a whole lot of action. So it didn't capture my attention a whole lot. But this episode got me intrigued. So I was like, if one of these episodes was going to win me over, it'd be this one.
Yeah. And then the continuation of it, whatever that might be.
Yeah.
Well, Chris, looks like it's about time we travel back to Meiji era Japan with our inner kids in tow in order to teach them our secret final attacks, but not the ones that leave us dead. Then we can see what they thought of Rurouni Kenshin.
This show seems like it could be cool with all the ninja stuff and all the mystical powers, but there's so much talking and not enough heads getting chopped off. But I still gave this 3.5 bowls of godlike speed cereal out of 5.
I wasn't really sure how I felt about this anime at first because of how many genres it had going on at the same time. Is it action? Is it history? Is it romance? Fantasy? I don't know. You wouldn't think a show could contain every theme imaginable and still be good, but the more it sinks in, the more I'm growing to appreciate it. Kenshin was an interesting and layered protagonist, the supporting characters well-developed, the relationships believable, and the action scenes epic. Plus, samurais are always awesome. Overall, I'd give Rurouni Kenshin 3.75 big bowls of feng shui cereal out of 5, but I feel bad for the big ninja guy from the first episode. With thumbs like that, he can never wield a cereal-eating spoon again. That poor soul.
I think that's our first, like, three-quarter, like, point. Like, 3.75. I like it.
Yeah, it's because I was, like, I was between a 3.5, but I didn't quite want to go 4. But I was like, it deserves more points than 3.5, I think, so...
So, well, talking about this episode helped because this raised my score from a 3 to a 3.5.
Well, that's good.
Do you have any final thoughts?
Final thoughts are, I feel like this is one of those situations, like with most of the animes that we've watched, where I would really have to take in the whole thing to get a full appreciation of it. And I can't judge too harshly off of watching 3 completely separate episodes that have very little connection and assume that I'm going to understand the story, because that would just be ridiculous for me to just assume. So I did like what I saw. So it's one of those where I don't know that I'll go back and watch it because it's very long and I don't know if I want to devote all that time to it, but I appreciate what we did see and I can see why people liked it.
Yeah, like I said at the beginning, this was really hard for me to figure out whether I liked it or not. it seems like there's some good stuff to it, but there is a lot of downtime and a lot of chit chat in the episodes that we watched. Though, like I said, the last episode had me wanting to watch more of it. So, I mean, there is that. It does have a lot of the Trigun vibe to it. And as we said, this came first. So this is something that Trigun fed off of and not the reverse. So that cannot count against it. It also, I feel like it also has some of the flaws that Dragon Ball Z can have at times, where there's a lot of talking about a technique and nothing really takes place during the episode. At least with this episode, we got a lot of backstory in between that. So I think that kind of helped to its advantage. So, you know, overall, I think it's pretty interesting. I think it would be really good watching the whole thing. So I think I'm going to give it more of a shot, and I think I will watch more of this show.
Yeah, so thanks, Kiri, for recommending this.
Yeah, thanks, Kiri.
Well, listeners, looks like our milk supplies now run dry, so it's time for us to say goodbye. Next week, we'll be watching
Clone High, suggested by Mark via YouTube, who also suggested The Tick.
Oh, Mark. I love you, Mark.
I was going to say, I know that Joseph loves you because you suggested The Tick.
But I've never heard of Clone High, but we'll see. Well, once again, I'm Joseph.
And I'm Chris.
And we'll see you next Saturday.
Presented by NerdSloth,
a place for lazy nerds.
If you like what you heard, consider donating at patreon.com/nerdsloth so we can continue bringing you quality shows. Be sure to also leave us a review and share your favorite episodes and clips on social media. If you're looking for more content, visit us at nerdsloth.com.